It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it started as a blob of plastic waste in a kitchen. It ended up in kitchens all over the world. We'll find out more about Tupperware's origin story coming up. First, after a months-long stalemate, Canada is signing on to a three-way deal to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement. The new deal will no longer be known as NAFTA. Instead, it's being called the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. The deal came right before an end-of-September deadline last night, and President Trump announced it officially in the White House Rose Garden this morning.
It's my great honor to announce that we have successfully completed negotiations on a brand new deal to terminate and replace NAFTA and the NAFTA trade agreements with an incredible new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
A lot still has to happen before this new deal takes effect, including approvals from legislatures in all three countries. Megan Casella covers trade for Politico, and she's with us now to talk about the deal. Megan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So it's a new deal with a new name. Is it really that big a departure from NAFTA, or is this just kind of an update that people have been looking for?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's definitely an update, and people on all sides of the spectrum are saying, you know, we needed this update. NAFTA had been called sort of an old lady of trade agreements, and so the modernization is good. But there's also some changes. I mean, there's the Trump administration and all three countries do deserve recognition for making some tough compromises in different areas and making some changes to the agreement that I think will have some tangible effects.
We'll dig into some of the changes in general. Right now, I want to key in on one here in Wisconsin and give a listen to President Trump. He specifically mentioned Wisconsin dairy farmers when he announced this today and the lack of access some have had to Canadian dairy markets. Here's a listen.
We've opened it up to our farmers. So the folks up in Wisconsin, I'll tell you what, I went to Wisconsin, I went to Iowa. Joni knows better than anybody, right? And Scott Walker, who I think is a fantastic governor, talks about it all the time, that our farmers were not treated properly by Canada. Now they're going to be treated with respect.
Now diving into the details, Megan, there was one class in particular of dairy product that Canada had raised tariffs on. It got a lot of attention here in Wisconsin. That was one of the sticking points, and it sounds like that's something that got ironed out in this agreement.
Absolutely. I think you're referring to Class 7, the Class 7 quota and pricing system. And so Canada agreed to drop that system, which is a big win for U.S. dairy farmers. And the other dairy update is that, in general, the Canadian dairy market is going to be opened by about 3.6%. So those two things in combination, as you say and as we just heard on that recording, Trump said over and over for months that dairy was going to be a make or break part of the deal. And Canada did agree to make those changes, and that should be, I'm guessing, welcomed in Wisconsin.
Now, the U.S. and Mexico had the outlines of a deal just between the two countries. So there's a question of, are we going to end up with a three-country deal? What were some of the sticking points with getting Canada signed on and having a three-country agreement again?
There were a few of them. Dairy was definitely a big one. The government procurement market was a big one. The Trump administration had laid out some demands that Canada said, you know, no way, we'll never agree to that. And Canada ended up sort of getting its way, and the procurement chapter stayed markedly the same. And others were the sunset clause that the Trump administration initially wanted, the deal to automatically terminate every 5 years if all three countries didn't agree to renew it. There were some specifics on autos, although that wasn't as much of an issue with Canada. That was mostly ironed out with Mexico. And then the very complicated dispute settlement mechanism. That was another area where Canada sort of got its way because the chapter in question largely stayed the same.
Right. The United States had wanted to, it sounds like, significantly change that dispute resolution system. So when there's a grievance between countries, the question is, how do we deal with it? What do we end up with there?
So it's that chapter stayed the same. And, you know, the Trump administration had this sort of wary, there's several different dispute settlement mechanisms within the pact, and they all get very complicated. But the Trump administration basically had been wary of any systems or any mechanisms that allowed foreign companies to sort of go against the U.S. government, or that enabled them, or made it easier. And so, you know, in some ways, one called investor state dispute settlement has been sharply scaled back, but then another dispute mechanism is largely staying the same. So it's sort of a compromise there. You can see where both countries got a little bit of what they wanted.
Megan Casella is with us from Politico. We're talking about this new sequel to NAFTA, a new trade agreement agreed upon by the leaders of Canada, the United States, and Mexico. You mentioned autos. This is a really complicated issue, given that a lot of cars are made in multiple countries, parts in one country, assembly in another, for one example. How did that end up getting ironed out?
What they worked out there, there is a blanket commitment that Canada and Mexico won't be subject to any new tariffs that the Trump administration might impose on autos, which is a big thing because there's an investigation going on now where the White House is considering imposing new tariffs there. So to start off, Canada and Mexico got an exemption from those, which was big. And the other is that the Trump administration was seeking and succeeded in increasing the amount of North American content that must be included in a car in order for that car to qualify for zero duties under the agreement. And so it used to be that 62.5% of a car had to be created from within North America, but the other 30-odd percent could have parts from, you know, Asia or Europe or wherever that might be, and it could still be considered a North American car. That's actually increased to about 75%. And so that's a way of increasing the amount of North American steel and aluminum and glass and plastic that's included in that car in order for those cars to be sold with zero tariffs under NAFTA.
One other point of concern people have been watching for is labor standards, how this new agreement deals with labor rights, union rights. What have we seen in this fairly long, complicated agreement?
Certainly. So on labor particularly, well, first, just relating to autos, they've increased wages in a way. They're seeking to increase wages by saying that about two-fifths of a car must be produced by workers earning at least $16 an hour. That's one example of a way that they're trying to increase, particularly in Mexico, the wages of workers working in factories and assembly plants and that sort of thing. And there's other rules like that written throughout the agreement, but what we've heard so far from labor groups and lawmakers that are particularly interested in this is that they are appreciative of the fact that there's new rules written in, but they're still uncertain as to how enforceable these rules might be. And so it seems at this point that the jury is maybe still out from these labor groups, who will have significant sway over Democrats in the U.S. and how they might vote on the deal. The jury's still out as to whether or not they'll ultimately be happy with where the language ended up on labor.
One of the most controversial tariffs lately has been the Trump administration's tariffs on aluminum and steel, including from Canada and Mexico. I understand that that was not part of this deal. Those tariffs still stand, even though they were a retaliation in part against the Canadian dairy pricing. So those are still out there, those tariffs?
They are. They appear to still be worked out, but for now those tariffs remain in place, which came as somewhat of a surprise and a disappointment, I think, for many who are, you know, eager to see where this deal is going to land. But Trump officials have been adamant, I guess, you know, for a while now, that they wanted the steel and aluminum tariffs to be negotiated separately from any broader regional trade agreement. And so that's why, I guess, for now they're still being separate. And I think it remains to be seen what exactly will have to happen in order for those tariffs and the retaliatory tariffs to be lifted. But that's something that a lot of business groups were seeing. You know, they're saying this isn't really all that meaningful for many of our companies and members if those tariffs remain in place. But that's a huge issue in trilateral trade among the three countries at this point. And so if those tariffs remain in place, it's less meaningful to them what exactly is in NAFTA, because the tariffs are sort of more of a pressing issue.
Now, the leaders of the three countries have agreed to this, but their legislatures have to sign on. Is that a slam dunk?
Not at all. No, it's going to be sort of a long road to completion, particularly in the U.S., but that's not to say it's a foregone conclusion in either Canada or Mexico either. Some of these things on dairy and others might be politically tricky to get passed in Canada. In the U.S., it's nearly impossible that this deal will come up for a vote in the current Congress, much more likely that it'll come up for a vote sometime in 2019. And so, of course, it's going to be an open question at this point ahead of midterms whether or not Democrats will regain control of one or both houses. And so you can imagine if either chamber switches hands to Democratic control, some Democrats are just resisting everything that the Trump administration tries to do, and they might be loath to give the administration any sort of concrete policy win, even if they like parts of the deal. They might just say, you know, we're going to block this and we're going to make it really difficult and try to postpone a vote here.
We'll leave it there for now. Megan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Megan Casella covers trade for Politico. She was with us to talk about a new agreement to replace NAFTA. It's being called the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement.